Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over 16 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, engaging authors and academics who, in their research and studies, contribute in some form or fashion to changing the way government does business. There is a long tradition of public management scholarship that has provided empirical support for the hypothesis that management matters for government performance. One specific management activity that has been growing in prominence in federal agencies over the last several years is risk management. More commonly used in private sector firms, risk management has recently been recognized as a valuable tool by public organizations. How can risk management strategies reduce operational risk? What is an improper payment? How has the U.S. Department of Labor employed risk management strategies to reduce improper payments in its unemployment insurance program? The IBM Center for the Business of Government has a long interest in risk management, and today we'll explore a specific focus on employing risk management strategies to reducing improper payments in the U.S. Department of Labor's unemployment insurance program. My guest today is Professor Justin Bullock, co-author of the IBM Center report, Risk Management and Reducing Improper Payments, a case study of the U.S. Department of Labor. Professor Bullock, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael.
Justin, your report provides a case study of how the U.S. Department of Labor developed and implemented strategies to reduce improper payments in the unemployment insurance program. And one prominent agency within labor is the Employment and Training Administration, ETA, which administers the unemployment insurance program. For purposes of setting context, what is the mission of labor and what is the mission and purpose of the ETA?
Certainly. So the Department of Labor has a wide array of programs. Their specific mission is to foster, promote, and develop the welfare of the wage earners, job seekers, and retirees of the United States, improve working conditions, and advance opportunities for profitable employment, and assure work-related benefits and rights. And so it's kind of the catch-all place for federal, although there are other agencies that handle these issues as well, but it's kind of the main agency for, or the main department for dealing with issues of workers, workers' rights, and broadly people who are participating in the labor pool. The Employment and Training Administration is a subsection of the Department of Labor, and its specific mission is to contribute to the more efficient functioning of the U.S. labor market by providing high-quality job training, employment, labor market information, and income maintenance services primarily through state and local workforce development systems. And so the ETA in particular is trying to find ways to keep the American labor force as efficient as possible. And one of the ways in which they do that is by trying to run the unemployment insurance program as effectively as possible. And so they try to be very good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars while trying to provide some basic safety net for workers when they lose their job through no fault of their own.
As a follow-up, would you tell us more about the unemployment insurance program, its structure, financing, and the role the federal government plays in executing?
Sure. It's a fairly complex program. As I started getting into the unemployment insurance program and studying it in my PhD program, I've been studying improper payments since I was in my PhD at the University of Georgia. The unemployment insurance program I started delving into because my advisor at the time was doing some work with the unemployment insurance program, and it actually took me a bit of time to sort through all of it. So it's a jointly administered federal-state program, and what that means is that the federal government provides the basic structure for the rules and some of the basic financing mechanisms, but they allow the states to make a lot of decisions about the specifics. So before I get there, though, it provides unemployment benefits to eligible workers. And eligible workers, there's a couple criteria around that. But in general, it's people who were holding a job and then lost their job and it wasn't a fault of their own. And what that means specifically varies by state definitions, but being laid off or an organization closing or something like that, or downsizing. And then the program makes payments directly to these workers. on some sort of replacement basis. So it'll be some percentage of their income for some number of weeks. And the idea here is that it helps the worker meet their basic needs while they're transitioning into another job. Again, it's a federal-state partnership. The federal government, just to kind of give you some highlights, they ensure that the state laws, regulations, rules, and operations conform with the federal laws. They determine administrative fund requirements and provide money to states for proper and efficient administration. So the states get, in part, their administration dollars from the federal funds. They set broad policy for the administration of the program. They monitor the states. They provide technical assistance to the states, which is some of what we're going to see throughout this conversation. And they hold and invest the money in a fund that they collect from the states until it's time to be drawn down by the states for payment or compensation. And the states, on the other hand, play the role of essentially being the administrators. So each of the states have state workforce agencies where they work with the actual claimants to determine whether they're eligible and then coordinate the payments to those individuals.
Justin, your report for the IBM Center focuses on tackling improper payments. What constitutes an improper payment? And perhaps you could tell us more about improper payment legislation and OMB requirements.
Sure. There's a lot going on there with improper payments, so I'll try to not talk around it too much. I've been interested in improper payments, again, since I was working on my PhD. What constitutes an improper payment is a question that I get quite often, actually, in presenting some academic research at conferences. And it's essentially these programs, in particular the Department of Labor, but some others that we can talk about, have a code or a set of eligibility criteria for who should be receiving money. And then there's some type of criteria on the amount in which they receive. And so an improper payment is a payment that is paid to a citizen, or it can be paid to an organization, but in this context, it's a citizen. And it's improper if, one, it is paid to someone who wasn't eligible. So if you weren't, if you had been fired, for example, and it was for cause, and you got unemployment insurance payments, for example, that would be improper because you weren't meeting the code set of eligibility. So that's one way that it can be improper. The second is that these federal programs, and sticking with our case here, Department of Labor and Unemployment Insurance Program, have a formula for how much each person should receive. And these formulas are different by state. They have some basic set criteria. But so even if you are eligible and you are paid because you are eligible, an improper payment can arise if you are paid more or less than you're supposed to. We mostly focus on overpayments, but you could also be underpaid, and that would also classify as an improper payment.
Justin, as a follow-up, OMB highlights the review process it expects agencies to perform in tackling improper payments. Would you outline the four-step process highlighted in your report?
Sure. So the OMB plays the major role of making sure that federal programs are doing their best to lower improper payments. And they've got more of this responsibility over time. But in an OMB circular, this four-review process that you speak of, it can be found in the Appendix C to circular number A123 in the OMB for anyone interested. But they lay out a process that it expects the OMB expects agencies to perform. And the four-step process looks like this. The first step is that agencies are to review all their programs and activities and identify those that are susceptible to significant improper payments. And then once they've identified these programs, they are required to obtain a statistically valid estimate of the annual amount of improper payments for those programs that were identified in the first step. Then after they have put in process, which for the Department of Labor, they have this information gathering unit called the Benefit Accuracy Measurement Program, which is where a lot of these data are generated from, then they are required to implement a plan to reduce improper payments. And then the agencies are required to write an annual agency financial report, which is where a lot of these numbers are found, or a performance and accountability report. The OMB also provides a variety of tools and other requirements to the programs as well.
OMB may classify a program as high priority if the program meets specific conditions. Justin, what are those conditions?
In the same OMB circular that I mentioned, that has a A123 circular and In particular, they laid out an Appendix C that lays out a bunch of these things. And so in that same document, it talks about when the OMB may classify a program as a high priority. And the conditions are as such. A program is susceptible to significant improper payments as defined by statute and OMB implementation guidance, including if the program has greater than $10 million in improper payments and over 1.5% of payments are improper, or if the program has more than $100 million total dollars in estimated improper payments, and if it did any of the following three things. First, estimated and reported improper payments above the OMB determined threshold, which is currently at this time $750 million in improper payments, or contributed to government-wide improper payments in the most recent reporting year. If they did not report an improper payment estimate for the most recent reporting year, but it had reported improper payments before and did not receive measuring and reporting relief from the OMB, or has not yet reported an overall improper payment estimate amount, but the aggregate of the program's component improper payments is above the threshold. So essentially, they're looking here for either big programs, such as Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and something like unemployment insurance, or they're looking for programs that have had a history of having large amounts of improper payments. And so these are things like supplemental security income, retirement survivors and disability insurance, rental housing assistance programs. So even if they're not quite as big, they are programs that have been sort of documented to have a decent percentage of improper payments.
One specific management activity in federal agencies that has been growing in prominence over the last several years is risk management. More commonly used in private sector firms, risk management has recently been recognized as a valuable tool by public organizations. Justin, what is enterprise risk management? And perhaps you can outline the benefits of risk management to operational performance.
Sure. I agree that it does have a growing prominence both in the private sector. One interesting piece is that it is risk management strategies are also attracting in the literature some continued importance in the public sector as well. I actually have a paper under review right now with Dr. Greer and another co-author looking at more formalizing some of these risk management strategies for the public sector. So this has become sort of a big issue, not only in the private, but also the public sector. And there are some general benefits of risk management. And some of these also have been have shown up in other IBM reports, for example. But some of these benefits include improved decision-making, improved information flow, gaining an understanding of the importance of sustaining high credibility as an agency, affording the opportunity for agencies to make more educated decisions. It keeps them off the GAO's high-risk list. It allows them to better budget for uncertainty. They're better positioned to take advantage of opportunities and improved performance. And so this sort of broad risk management strategy allows them to think more carefully through all the types of risks that an organization might incur. And so it has a wide array of benefits to all types of organizations, both in the public and the private sector.
What are the root causes of improper payments in labor's unemployment insurance program? We'll explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors returns.